This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. Learn about the wonderfully tart Montmorency cherry at choosecherries.com.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, March 17th. For some of you, that's St. Patrick's Day. For the rest of us, it's a very different time here in New York City and the rest of the country. We're doing a remote show. The Heritage Radio Network studio is currently closed. And this is a disclaimer that the sound quality may be different. We're all calling in on our laptops through a special program. So that'll be one change. But we're going to introduce our guests now. It's going to be slightly more formal because we're all talking through our computers. So let's go around the room. Let's start with Sean. Please introduce yourself.
Sure, Jimmy. It's Sean McNulty. I'm the host and producer of the Selling Craft Beer News Podcast.
Great. Kat?
Hi, this is Kat Walensky. I am the associate editor at Fine Pair.
And Zach?
Hi, I'm Zach Mack. I'm the owner of ABC Beer Co. in the East Village and a beer contributor at Thrillist.
You guys are so great. I'm so happy to have you guys on. Just about, you know, what's going on right now. I literally live on the same street as McSorley's, which is one of the older bars in New York City. And today, they're open for takeout only. And there's a sign that says, cheeseburgers and liverwurst sandwiches. Things have changed really quickly, Sean, since we first started talking about the show. What was your idea for the show originally? And tell us a little bit more about your podcast.
Sure. The show was originally just to get some great people in New York City beer from different perspectives. Myself and Kat, certainly more the journalism side from the news side of it, and then some Zach, certainly more of the proprietor bar owner side of it, and then we had a couple of brewery ideas, and just to mix it up and just get the temperature on where we think New York City beer is at in 2020 was the general idea, kind of as we, you know, in the first quarter of the year looking forward, and then all this happened. So my podcast revolves around, I basically take a summary of all the beer news of the week and put it into a, what I call 6-minute-ish podcast to kind of condense it down for beer fans who, I mean, Kat and Zach and I kind of, we live on beer Twitter all day, but we certainly follow the stuff a little more closely. But a lot of people are interested in this kind of stuff about if someone's closing a tap room or somebody's sold to another brewery or sales trends, or why am I seeing 20 hard seltzers on a shelf? Kind of condense all that news down for beer fans in a short amount of time so you kind of catch up in a timely manner. So this was the idea, and then this week happened. So now it's a little more taking the temperature of, I think, you know, what's the future of New York City, you know, beer culture, really.
Yeah. And Kat, so earlier this year you did a prediction of 2020 trends. Would you like to just recap that for us and perhaps suggest where we're going now?
I did. Did I?
Well, Vine Pair.
Yeah, that was probably me. Beer specifically, or like
I think
New York, or
New York and beer and beverages.
Yeah, I think one thing that I've been writing a lot about, and we talk about a lot in the office, and I actually would challenge us to not talk about during this podcast, is hard seltzer. That is just huge. People thought it was a fad. People thought it was stupid. And regardless of your or my personal feelings about this as a beverage, it's happening. It's not going anywhere. It's going to be here in 2020 and probably for years to come. Other things like on the opposite end of that spectrum, which I'm a fan of, is more non-alcoholic and low alcohol options, which sounds kind of counterintuitive to a beer writer and lover, but you know, when you're around this stuff all the time, and especially for industry members, you kind of need a break every now and then. So that's something that I've been a proponent of. And like, now we're seeing not just, you know, Heineken 0.0 exploding, but smaller craft breweries like Athletic Brewing Co. I mean, they just had that 17 point something million dollar investment, and they're now expanding from Connecticut to the West Coast. Like, it's happening, people.
Agreed.
Yeah, there's a lot going
Absolutely.
On with that. We did a dry January show. And Zach, I'm just going to try to move everyone around. Zach, Are you prepared for this type of shutdown right now? You know, are you doing retail? You're doing online beer sales?
We're in the lucky position to be, to answer your question, one word answer, I don't think anyone's prepared for something like this. This is unprecedented, and pretty much everyone I hear talking about this is it's almost as bad as Sandy was in some ways, but more people are talking about it like 9/11, because literally everyone's affected in so many levels of shutdown, from, you know, from the distributors and the breweries themselves, who are about to see their entire revenue stream dry up, to us, who are going to see our customers turned away. We're lucky in that we're one of those places that has always been a retail and bar combination, like one of the hybrid shops. So it isn't hard for us to pivot over into selling stuff for people to go. We sell our beer online on Drizzly. We deliver it nationally through a website called Bev. And we also have food, which is actually proven huge in the last 48 hours. I've watched how many people have come through just to get sandwiches or fresh bread or things like that. So just because, you know, the community is very much aware that a lot of places are supposed to be closed, we're still seeing a decent amount of retail business. We're still going to take a huge hit in our bar business not being available. But we're just happy that we can still get our employees paid with some of this income through retail beer sales.
Great. And Sean, I know you came to the show with a number of questions. Why don't you take over for a few minutes?
Yeah, I mean, it's so many areas to kind of start with. But I guess getting both your temperatures on this, in terms of, Zach, you mentioned, you know, a couple of digital outlets. Is this going to be kind of a, traditionally it's been, you know, go to the brewery, pick up your four pack, pick up your case. Is this going to be kind of a pivot, do you think, toward the growth of digital sales in craft beer, you know, for small craft beer now? Or is this going to be, we'll get through a few months and then habits may return to what they used to be?
You know, it depends on where you are. I think for New York City, and we're talking about New York here, it's never really been the situation for people to call ahead to a brewery, have them bring it out to your car. That's what's happening now because of the no contact or the contactless delivery thing that's going on. But I think going forward, the digital stuff is going to be more popular for people who are looking for beer they can't get in their own market. I know that for us, we use Drizzly and we have for months, but the online delivery for beer as it stands right now isn't really that huge for craft. I know there are a lot of bodegas around here that do banger business on selling macro stuff, and I think that's not something that's going to change, but I have yet to see a huge uptick in people who can get beer that they want brought to them through something like Drizzly. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the New York City breweries are more focused on doing more of their own self-releases and keeping that revenue generated within house, and I think that makes sense. So a lot of the high profile stuff that people would want, they have to go to the brewery for anyway, and a lot of the more, you know, run of the mill stuff that you can get online or through delivery is something that people will get from their local purveyor, thanks to the way Drizzly works with their algorithm.
Kat, how about you?
So yeah, I think Zach's point about delivery ramping up a little bit is sort of two-parted. Like, for some retailers, including, I guess, ABC Beer Co., Zach, and then I know I've heard from other places like Craft Beer Cellar, they have seen this really great uptick in business right now because everyone's running out and trying to stock up on their beers and whatever other items are available in the shop. So, you know, we've seen some reports are saying like a 500% surge in retail. But then, you know, how long will this last? If everything gets shut down, what happens then? How quickly are things being restocked? And that's actually a question that I have for both of you, is like, what's happening with your distributors, and are they still able to promise and deliver everything that they're supposed to, which I imagine they can't.
I would take that, Zach.
Yeah, personally, I've noticed that only a few people, like a handful, anecdotally, and only a few people have said that they're not delivering into the city right now. I think people are excited to get whatever business they can out. So some of the local breweries are saying they're holding it off for the week, but the big distributors like Union and those guys are still running their trucks. In fact, they're still trying to push kegs on me that they know I can't do anything with. It's been really interesting. I know they're not really grappling it. They're like, oh, a lot of the people I've spoken to, it's like, this is gonna be done in like, you know, 4 or 5 days. I'm like, 4 or 5 days? So I think when a couple of people making decisions come to grips with what is actually happening here, there may be as we've noticed, every news cycle, I feel like every 24 hours, there's like a sea change in like the way people are looking at this. So mm-hmm. yesterday, on Sunday morning, things looked very, very different. And then by Monday morning, when the ruling came down that we were going to have to close the bars, there was a whole different set of chatter. It's like I got three times the amount of email because people had to double back on what they were offering and what they were able to do this week. So honestly, I think this is going to put a test, unlike when Sandy happened, which was all done out of like a, you know, an actual destruction of property and trucks not being able to make it in because they'd been flooded. This is something that's all coming through lawmakers, and it's still kind of nebulous. So I think people are trying to figure out ways that they can continue the status quo without endangering anyone and doing their part to, you know, uphold what the whole quarantine's about and keep people safe while still not trying to completely axe their revenue stream.
Right.
Well, I want to say I appreciate that you guys are on and we're trying out this new system remotely today. So much has been happening. I don't know where you guys are looking for your updates. I know there's a text from the New York City Office of Emergency Management that you can get. I think you text in 692-692 and then you enter COVID, you can get the updates. But I've been following the New York City Hospitality Alliance and the New York Restaurant Association. Are there any sources that you guys are following, like Sean?
Yeah, I mean, local TV has been big for me, honestly. I mean, you know, I mean, so far, we'll see how much this goes on for. But, you know, Cuomo's been on TV every morning around 10:30, you know, giving an update, which has been great. So local TV for me has been really pretty accurate for the most part. And then the nightlife stuff, obviously, it's been fast and furious the past 2 days. But I imagine that's pretty much where it is right now for quite a while. The latest thing today was, you know, they don't think the cases are going to even come close to peaking until, you know, the end of April. So that's kind of the timeline, you know, de Blasio was putting out there for this to continue is going to be, you know, seemingly months at this point and not 6 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it was initially.
It's a big change. So Sean, let's just go backwards. So yeah. A couple of years ago, you came on and sat in the studio with us on Beer Sessions Radio. Yes, tell sir. Us your journey, since we can talk about other things. Let's tell us the journey of you, your interest in a podcast, why you started selling craft beer, and what else you do. Are you involved in the beer industry? Are you a financial analyst?
My background's in more content creation. So I've been a TV producer for many years at HBO. So I've always been big into producing and doing interview content and video content. And back when we first spoke, Jimmy, I was a fan of your podcast, and podcasting was really starting to take off a little more in the mainstream. So I wanted to kind of, you know, see how the real professional does it, Jimmy, and get a firsthand look, obviously. And then in terms of beer media, I was like, well, you know, whenever you hang my beer friends and like people are always interested in this kind of information, but I'm someone who just, you know, been a craft beer fan, you know, for 6-7 years, just reading about the business a lot. And I'm like, well, people are interested in who AB InBev bought or, you know, what's going on in the sales thing or something closed or what trends are going on. But people don't want to necessarily read all the beer publications out there. So I thought it was an opportunity where a lot of beer podcasts were doing great with the interview content, but the news content wasn't really there. So I just had this idea of like, well, what if I create this brief for people who want to be in the know, but don't want to spend hours and hours of their time. You know, they're beer fans. They're not people who work in the industry. So that was the idea to kind of bridge that together and create this, again, weekly, biweekly podcast that sums it up real tight for people. So
it's kind of like a headlines.
Yeah, or kind of like a sports center
beer for business. Beer reviews,
if I could, yeah, exactly. And try to make it fun, make it lively, and you know, make it quick. And then in the beer industry in New York, I've volunteered all the New York City Beer Brewers Guild festivals and just have been, you know, involved and help out the scene wherever the people need help.
And Sean, what are a couple of the headlines separate from coronavirus? A couple of headlines in the beer industry that you've featured the last 2 weeks.
Exactly. The thing that Kat alluded to, the Athletic Brewing raising $17.5 million. I mean, that's for non-alcoholic beer is a pretty big headline. And I'm with Kat on that. I think non-alcoholic beers, it's 0.5% of the market at this point. But I think there's amazing upside for that part of the sector. And there's really no one playing in it in scale outside of big beer, which is kind of, you know, where craft beer was, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago. Where there's just such a white space for someone who makes a great product, they can really sell it to a lot of people. So I think that's one thing that they, you know, the news-wise, that's a lot of money to raise for anybody doing non-alcoholic beer. And then, and then Untappd being acquired by Beer Advocate, certainly, Beer Advocate being acquired by Untappd is certainly for the beer fans out there, a big part of the culture. Those two brands will, you know, combine resources now.
That's great, Sean. So, Kat, did you write about the Untappd acquiring Beer Advocate?
I did, yes.
You want to tell us a little more about that?
Sure. So it was the parent company of Untappd, which is called, I think, Next Beverage?
Next Glass,
yes. So Next Glass technically acquired Beer Advocate, which then kind of puts Beer Advocate and Untappd as siblings. And I guess the sort of give and take of that was Beer Advocate has the benefit of obviously staying in business, first of all, and kind of getting plugged into that digital and social landscape that Untappd has been really, really good at navigating and creating, and even changing beer nerd culture completely. And then the benefit for them is I think Beer Advocate's longevity and the fact that they've had a lot of successful events, and Untappd famously kind of failed at throwing a beer festival last year. So, you know, I think them working together will be
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, there's definitely a community that Beer Advocate has. And one thing for you, Kat, so again, your backstory, I've had you on several years ago when you were just starting out with Ale Street News.
Yeah.
I know you had freelanced a little bit. Tell us your path as a beer writer.
Sure. So the first, I guess, Ale Street News was my first column. I was the New York City beer columnist for several years. And I had also been writing for local blogs, such as Brooklyn, for a long time. I did the Brooklyn Beer Books, the Queen's Beer Book, which was these physical beer guides to the boroughs. And eventually I became the curator and editor, kind of picking out some of the best locations for beer in the city. And then each page of the book would get you a free beer at that location. So that was a big project for a long time. Then I was writing freelance for 3 years full time. I wrote for Craft Beer and Brewing magazine. I did a lot for Men's Journal, and had some more trade-focused clients like Equipped Brewer, a bunch of publications. And I also worked at Browery Lane, beloved beer shop in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And when KCBC was starting out, it's too bad they're not on the podcast today, but I was helping out in the tap room there for about 6 months. So, yeah, I feel like I got my well-rounded scope of the industry before finally taking this full-time job with Fine Pair. And I started as the staff writer there, then became senior staff writer, and now associate editor. So yeah, I've been here at Fine Pair for more than two years now.
No, it's amazing. And you're kind of one of the few authorities on beer who's actually writing in the city regularly. So congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, guys, what are you guys drinking today? So we're supposed to be drinking on the air. I'll tell you what I have. I have a Sam Smith Porter. I always like that. That's something that I got at my local corner deli. They always have that. What are you guys drinking? And just so we can keep track of that, too. Keep our drinking traditions going, kids.
I am drinking Three's Logical Conclusion for several reasons. One of which is I just love this beer. Two, it was one of the few things that was left in my grocery store that I actually wanted to buy. And I thought it was kind of appropriate for the podcast, like with all this confusion and crazy stuff happening with the mayor and Cuomo and all these decisions that are being made and flipped every moment and hour.
Well, Kat, I'll tell you guys, at my local supermarket, I was not surprised that the cold beer section was pretty much wiped out, along with odd things like in the pasta section, spaghetti was gone, but not odd shapes like penne and rigatoni.
Oh my God, I noticed that too.
In the sliced packaged cheese section, all the string cheese was gone, but sliced cheese wasn't gone. So I don't know if there's anything else that you guys have noticed that people have been hoarding, because this whole thing about stocking your pantry, and I have seen tons of cases of hard seltzer in all the delis that are moving stuff, but
yeah,
it's been a little funny.
In my local, my cheese situation was different. Everything was gone except for three packages of the Daiya vegan cheese.
That's encouraging.
I know. I was like, I actually like their cheese, but whatever. And then
I'm actually we're selling a lot of cheese. I'm sorry.
Really?
Go Zach.
Yeah,
go.
We have a cheese counter in our place, and we're selling so much of it. And I don't know if that's because there's like no other options near us, especially now. But the Brie and the like the Cashel Blue and stuff, we sold so much of it.
Wow.
Which I know I was kind of surprised by.
But I guess maybe. Yourselves.
Yeah, I guess it's in this time in quarantine, you can eat whatever you want.
Well, you know, it's a question about what local is, Zach, and I think you're probably the pulse of it, because it seems that many of the places that are open are just, you know, broader based delis, grocery stores that don't really have a specialty for beer or foods. What else is moving at ABC Beer, and what are you drinking too right now?
I'll say I'm drinking Party Shirt Fridays by Common Roots, partly because I love these guys, but also because last weekend I was up in the Adirondacks for a cousin's baby shower. So I was able to go to the brewery. They had a fire recently, and I like to support these guys because they can use the help, even though they make great beer. They're doing just fine now, but they got a long way to go, but they're doing better now. But I like to support these guys, and this beer is delicious. In terms of what's selling these days, in terms of keeping on the grocery thing, we saw a lot of fresh bread, and that's been like one of the best things we've sold since the very beginning. And I don't think there's a lot of outlets in the city for really good fresh bread. And we get it delivered to us every morning by Pain d'Avignon, and just like I think the quality of the bread is really really good, and that speaks to something that everyone around here kind of appreciates. There's not a ton of options in the East Village for bakeries for people to pick up bread every morning. So I think people love that. But
and I would jump in and say if you are, when you're listening, as of now, all the green markets in New York City are open, and I go to the one in Union Square, and it's there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. And there's a couple of great bakers there, including She-Wolf. And Sean, what are you drinking, brother?
Well, it is St. Patrick's Day, and I'm an Irish citizen, so I'm having a Guinness at the moment. But right next to it, I have a Crowler from Fifth Hammer. I got a Schwartz beer called Year of the Schwartz from them. I just picked up about half an hour before we started talking. So
that's amazing, Year of the Schwartz.
Yeah,
it does talk about trends, like craft beer trends. It does seem that a lot of breweries are making a Black Pils or a Schwartz beer.
This is definitely – I was talking about this with Chris Kuzma the other day. This has definitely been the year of the Black Lager. It's unbelievable to me. Something that I've appreciated since I first got into craft beer and never saw it outside of your Kostritz or on the shelf most places. Now seeing it done in such great regularity that I can actually pick it up and actually put it on draft, and they're actually really good and people want to buy them because I can get them excited about it for the first time ever. I always feel like Americans have this very weird kind of a strange relationship with dark beer in this country because they don't understand it. Maybe their only experience with it was Guinness, or it was in a bad context. I like to assume just because malt driven darker beers haven't really been a huge part of the upswing in beer consumption in this country. And now that we actually have light bodied Schwartz beers and dark lagers that people can get behind, it's kind of turning that on its head.
Yeah, I mean, the classic in Germany was always it was a Helles and a dark. So a dark lagers have a big part of our tradition of beer. Kat, you know, back to the story about Untappd acquiring Beer Advocate. So in a time like this, when people are ordering online or doing takeout, do you think that people rely on Untappd to find beer, or do you think that they're more they're just going to be loyal to a local place that they know?
I think the Untappd user is different, is like its own segment of craft beer consumer. I think a lot of people are moving toward local and, you know, supporting the businesses they know, but I don't know that, like, how much is overlap with Untappd, where it's a lot more about what's novel, and trying everything that's new and logging as many beers as possible so you can get as many badges as possible. And I don't know, I'm not a big Untappd user, so it's just like a different scene to me. Does anyone else feel like that?
Do you think that since people aren't in their offices, do you think it's something that people use when they're at work a lot, Untappd, and that they might not be using when they're not at work?
I feel like Untappd I use when I'm in the moment, if I'm going to use it. I'm also not a huge Untappd user. I've found myself a little, I fall back in and out of using the app more regularly, but I mostly do it as a note-taking tool just so I can remember what I've had, as opposed more to, I feel like a big part of the community, and a lot of people bring this up, is that there's a bit of exclusivity and people who kind of are overbearing on it, which, you know, again, every form of social media has the crowd of user that is like a little overbearing on the app. And I don't think that makes it something that I don't like to use. Mm. I think it's just for me, the taking myself out of the headspace to go and check into every single beer I sip, which, you know, there's a lot any given day. There's just too many for me to do that. I feel like it would just kind of set my brain off. That being said, I'm an avid Swarm user and I check into the bodega when I go to it every day. So I honestly don't know if this is something that I could really throw shade at, but it's one of those things that most people bring up about the app when they talk about whether or not they're a heavy user for
changing. So has there been data about buying beer online and, you know, the possibility to order beer nationally? Sean, is there a trend that you're following?
Yeah, I mean, every state's rules are so different. The national thing is always there is no national beer sales. I mean, I think it's Tavour, Tavour. That seems to be pretty popular with people. Drizzly is very, you know, Drizzly doesn't sell you the beer. They just, you know, facilitate the order, so they can be a little more national. But Amazon, everybody's waiting to see if they can crack the code. They hired a lobbyist last year to start looking into alcohol laws. I haven't heard much. That was probably over a year and a half ago. There's been nothing that came out of that so far. So if anybody's going to do that, everybody thinks Amazon's going to be the one to figure it out. But then from a national basis, it doesn't seem like there's too much. You know, every state has, you know, until the states come together on something that's a national law, it's really hard to have any kind of blanket coverage.
We've actually started using something similar to those sites too, something called Bev, BEVV.
Okay.
And it was founded by two lawyers who were, you know, one guy sent himself through law school specifically to study liquor law because of the archaic, you know, the competing, you know, 50 states in a district that you have to work with to understand shipping from one state to another, which ones, what exclusions are. It's all mind-numbingly, you know, archaic and dense, and it's a lot to understand. But they built the whole site based on where you can ship what. And we've had a really good experience working with them through our stuff. All the other online retail stuff I've used before was kind of all pie in the sky. Like they didn't really do the front end work. They just assumed that everyone would want to jump on and buy beer.
Right.
But because of the site, we've actually had a lot of larger partners come to us through them as like a conduit to kind of facilitate their nationalization of online sales. So I see good things coming down the line for maybe if breweries push more into wanting to ship. Yeah. That these things will take off. I think it's more going to come from the brewery side and the supply side.
That makes a lot of sense. Hey, guys, we're just going to take a short break. Let's say Schlancha. Can you say that, everybody?
Schlancha.
And Aaron Gobrag. Those are things I haven't heard in a while, and it's a little sad that today is St. Patrick's Day and there's no parade, and I can't get a beer at McSorley's. But we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee, representing 75% of U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry production. With over 100 articles published in health journals stating the vast health benefits of Michigan superfruit, it's best to choose the cherry with more. U.S. Montmorency tart cherries. They're available year-round, dried, frozen, canned, juice, and concentrate. Learn more about the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry at choosecherries.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is St. Patrick's, March 17th, and it's that year of the coronavirus. So we're talking about trends in beer and selling craft beer. But our guests are on. I want to just go back and change the conversation. We're all living in this semi-quarantine right now. We're doing a special remote recording via our laptops, so the sound quality might be a little funny. But I'd like to ask everyone just to give me a little local color from where they are. Like, for example, I live in the East Village on the same street as St. Pat. I want to call it McSorley's, the St. Patrick's to me. And literally today, they're only open for takeout little things like cheeseburgers and liverwurst sandwiches. And talking to Zach, what are you seeing in your neighborhood? You're kind of like a beacon over there on Avenue C. So just tell us a little bit about what's happening in your neighborhood, other places where you're able to get food or good beer. Let's start with you, Zach.
I mean, it's pretty crazy to see. I noticed how busy things were over the weekend. Honestly, probably a little too busy around here, given what people were trying to tell people to do online. But the after the shutdown rules came through, it's pretty much been gutted out. There's obviously none of the bars were open last night. After 8 o'clock, everything had shut down. So I had been taking care of things all day with my staff who was working retail, just kind of getting everything set up and being there to help them guide them through the first weird day of business doing just retail, because we definitely got some people who were not very understanding or a little irate that they couldn't come in and sit down and eat or come and sit down and have a beer. So, and that day I realized that we still have things like Bob White, the fried chicken joint next to us, which is fantastic. They're still doing their to-go and their takeout, and they're seemingly very busy. We're still doing our beer sales. Alphabet City Wine Co., our sister wine shop and liquor store, is still selling. They're doing very good business. Just like Kat was saying, whenever there's like a, you know, any kind of impending closure of anything, people, New Yorkers tend to make a run on the important stuff, which is booze and cigarettes in many people's eyes. So there has been quite a run on supplies.
Yeah. And Sean, what about you? So you said you're just over at Fifth Hammered. Do you live in Long Island City?
Yeah, I'm right in the heart of Long Island City. So beer-wise, you know, we've got Rockaway, Fifth Hammer, Alewife, who I believe that's also a brew pub. So they're closed at the moment. I don't know what their plan is yet. If they're going to, you know, reopen for as the – because they have a mix – they have some beers that are Alewife beers and some beers that are not. So I'm not quite sure what they're going to be doing yet. And then further up there is Iconic, which I was just at on Friday night. And that was, like Zach said, I mean, this neighborhood this weekend, Friday and Saturday, I couldn't tell you the difference between that and another weekend. It was pretty much business as usual, it seemed like. So it's pretty quiet today, but, you know, it's a Tuesday here. It's a pretty much more of a weekend kind of neighborhood. So beer wise, we'll see, you know.
But we can go to those breweries and get what?
Everybody
package beer to go.
Beer to go, yeah. So Fifth Hammer is doing crawlers and cans, and Rockaway, I believe, is doing the same. Iconic, I don't know, because I don't think they have crawler. I don't think they can their beer, but don't quote me on that. And then there's, of course, LIC Beer Project, who their cans are, you know, on shelves everywhere already. So,
And Kat, tell us, what neighborhood do you live in? What's going on there?
So I'm in the financial district, pretty close to the seaport. Kind of between the seaport and Fulton. And it's pretty quiet down here with everyone working from home. The grocery stores are packed. The bars are dead. But a lot of restaurants are still open. I've been ordering delivery daily since self-quarantining. So Westville is open doing deliveries. A lot of chains. Let's see. I've ordered from Go-Go Curry, Zucker's. I'm like, getting it in while I can, pretty much, and trying to support and tip 50% on everything I'm buying. And that's kind of it. Yeah, there's still some beer left in the grocery store, which I'll probably be going back for at some point this week. And we're just kind of kicking it.
Are there any stories that you're working on right now?
Yeah, so actually, we have on VinePair a live blog that's been ongoing since last week. So it's just like tons of updates, coverage of how coronavirus is impacting the drinks industry. And that includes the beer industry, wine, spirits, hospitality, and even related businesses like PR and other kind of retail stores. So if anyone is looking for major city or national coverage in general, that's being updated by us like
the VinePeer blog. And then Zach, question, just jumping to you, Zach, as a small business owner, what type of relief would benefit you? Would you like to not have to pay your sales tax? Anything along those lines?
There's a million things that's the scariest thing is we don't know exactly how long this is going to go. So the immediate answer to that question is, and then I've talked to a bunch of other small bar owners and business owners about this. An extension on sales tax, quarterly sales tax being due would probably be the number one thing right now, because I know for most people that's probably, you know, we deal with that four times a year. It's one of the hardest things to come up with, even when things are good for some bars. But I think in the long term, it's going to have to come down in some sort of stimulus package for people to be able to do things like pay their employees to come up with any kind of back rent. Because anyone who owns a small business in the city especially knows that most places don't run with much of a runway. There's maybe a week in the bank if you're lucky. For a lot of people, some people, if you're running for a month on slim pickings, that's, you know, you're in a good position. But when something like this dramatic hits, there's a lot of there's just pretty much nothing but uncertainty, and a lot of places won't be able to weather this. So I think as time weathers on, we're going to have more and more ideas of what we need. But I think extension on sales taxes, this payroll tax cut, I vaguely understand where Trump is going with this, but I don't think this is going to be something that trickles down to the small places fast enough. And I think something where we can use a stimulus for our employees who need their wages, so they don't feel the same grind day to day, would be huge for the city. I know it seems like a lot to ask, but this is unprecedented. And if something doesn't happen, we're going to see a ton of places close.
Yeah, no, this is really unprecedented. Especially, it's also timing that March and St. Patrick's Day is traditionally when the bar business really starts picking up for spring. So this is kind of, it's very unfortunate. I remember in 2015, we had the East Village gas explosion, and that was a localized, but it was considered a national disaster, and people rallied in many ways. But I don't know how you can rally when every business is struggling. You know, how can you go and support gift certificates from every business that you know? And I don't know if there's any options, if anyone can think beyond the next 30 days or 60 days.
I think that's the scary part, is that this is truly coast to coast. This isn't Sandy. This isn't 9/11. And in certain, that's the two biggest things I can think of off of my personal experiences. But when you know, everything from Maine to Honolulu is going to be shut down, it sounds like, for an extended period of time, you know, it does become harder to split your support. And a lot of people are going to be struggling personally. So you can't go out for 6 months and spend the money that you want to support these places as it is. There has to be some kind of top-down stimulus to protect businesses, especially small businesses in this country, because it sounds like a lot of what I've heard from the top recently has been more focused on protecting the bigger industries and the bigger players, and not so much the small businesses, which employ something like 49.7% of the workforce in this country. So it's going to be very important to see strong decisive action come down, hopefully from, maybe in this case, the governor's point, the governor's desk, to make sure that a lot of businesses don't end up having to shutter.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, just on the, I can see, sorry, excuse me for 1 second, how the bigger players can easily fit into roles with the government. So, for example, I just heard that some hotels are talking to government officials about, they could possibly be extra hospital rooms because they have the lodging. But again, that's big plugging into big. And also, like, if you're a large event company, hospitals need things like tenting and outdoor services, you know. But yeah, at small level, you're right, nothing really gets to us. Sean, any big picture stuff that's popping up on the radar?
Yeah, in terms of the bigger beer industry, I mean, Bud Stock is trading at what it was trading at in 2009. Boston Beer is doing very well. So, Miller Coors is trading also kind of at levels it was about, 10 years ago. Constellation, which is the Corona Modelo company, they're trading at what they were at in 2015. So, globally speaking, these are global companies, and, beer drinking around the globe. I mean, look at, Europe's basically shut down. China's going to start to rebound a little bit, but these companies are in it for a really, really tough year. I don't know what that means exactly, how it's going to trickle down, but those guys are going to be facing a tough headwinds for the next year, no matter what happens here in New York.
Yeah, I just want to thank you guys for coming on. Kat, is there anything else you want to say? We didn't get to talk to you too much.
Sure. Just going back to FinePair's live coverage that is up on our website on the homepage. It's finepair.com/coronavirus.drinksindustry. And we also are doing different lead stories each day covering how this is affecting the industry. So right now we have a story up about how this is affecting New York City deliveries and restaurants and bars and retail outlets. We have another one coming up that I'll be writing about how coronavirus is affecting the beer industry overall. And just keep an eye out. We'll be out there.
I'll tell you one thing for jobs. It's we don't really have a good example of how to create jobs. I mean, you almost have to go back to the Depression. And it's almost like the government just has to create jobs, like things that people can work on, because it's very hard to prop up a business if there's no customers. You know, if there's no sales, you're not going to run a restaurant. I mean, I've already seen in my neighborhood, B&H, it's a dairy kosher restaurant. They've overcome a lot. They literally closed today because they just can't run on a takeout model. And they're giving away soup this afternoon. So I don't know what the options are. Hopefully we'll get something, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of scared, and I haven't really had to deal with something like this in about 5 years. So, I don't know about you, Zach, but it seems like you've got your store model in place and that's good for you. What about for other businesses? I mean, you know, if half the city clears out, is there going to be business for anybody?
That's the question everyone's waiting to find the answer to. If this ends up being what it sounds like is going to be a closer to a 6 to 8 week situation than a 2 to 4 or 4 to 6 that they were originally saying, this is going to be insurmountable for pretty much anyone I can think of. Even if you have the means to make a little bit of money here and there, Everyone else's resources are going to run up dry. They're not going to be able to order the amount of takeout that's needed to sustain business in a city like New York or anywhere for that matter. So I think it's going to come down to what happens. I know there's talk of this cutting of a check for certain people, for people of a certain age in this country to stimulate the economy, but that only gets you so far. I honestly don't know what the answer is, because there's quite literally never been anything like this that's happened for such a long period of time that's going to hamper the natural movement of the economy. So even as someone who kind of dives deep into this stuff regularly to try to get a better understanding of how all this stuff works, it's usually one sector that gets plagued by something, but when it's something that's, you know, literally the entire thing is plagued, there's really no answer, and it's going to be, unfortunately, it's not even local, it's not even nation, it's global, and that could have like long lasting ramifications that we all kind of have to kind of grapple with. I know we're getting really deep into this, but it's just the last 72 hours have just been so weird.
Yeah. Sean, any final words?
Yeah, it was a stat that came out from the Brewers Association economists today that kind of blew my mind a little bit, but 40% of all independent craft beer is sold on premise, and there's now 20 states and counting across the country who are essentially, you know, limiting or shutting down all bars and restaurants. And if 40% of craft beer sales essentially go away, it's like that was just a stat that, as Zach said, if it's 4 to 6 weeks, that's one thing. If this is going, you know, into May and into June, you know, I'm not sure what's on the other side of this in a certain regard. So, I mean, Jimmy, you sound like you're kind of that same mindset of like a little more freaked out than like, oh, this could be a month of discomfort versus I'm not sure what, well, you know, how to,
you know, unless you're big, like this is the case where, right, I'm going to bring up hard seltzer. Sadly, I feel that the systems that are in place,
we're so close. You
know, yeah, I mean, grocery stores and larger, you know, distributors and everything. The system is in place to favor like some of the larger brands, including things like hard seltzer,
yeah,
which are, you know, shelf stable and in right, grocery stores. I'm not thrilled about that. But what I've seen also is talk about some businesses are just going to have to shift completely. Hand sanitizers might be a new thing. I read that a distillery in Portland has a line of hand sanitizer because they have the high-proof alcohol.
Yeah.
And I actually know a guy in Williamsburg that has a whole stash of high-proof alcohol. And last week, I was helping him try to talk about, you know, making and selling a hand sanitizer. So we don't know where this is going. I really want to thank you guys for coming on. One more time, let's go around the room. Everyone, please again, introduce yourselves one more time, and we'll sign off.
I'll start with me. Sean McNulty, it's the Selling Craft Beer podcast. You can get it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts are, you listen to podcasts.
Thanks, Sean. Yep. And Kat?
This is Kat Walensky, associate editor at Fine Pair.
Thank you for joining us, Kat. And Zach?
Of course.
This is Zach Mack, owner of Alphabet City Beer Co. and beer contributor at Thrillist.
You guys have been so great. Thanks so much. Thanks for also listeners. This is a special remote recording. Our studio's closed. The next few weeks, we will be doing shows like this while things continue. We're not really a news show, but we covered some news. But, you know, keep up to date with what's going on. And hopefully you guys will be raising a beer together soon. I'm drinking a Sam Smith Porter, and support your local breweries. Thanks for joining me. Big shout out to our producer, Dylan Hoyer, engineer, Matt Patterson. Thanks for joining us on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.